Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and I blame myself. I started planning for my first Red Wings postseason in years, and now they've lost six in a row, and if the playoffs started today, the Red Wings would not be part of it. It's my fault for coming down with the worst of sports fandom viruses, that being expectations. Oh, I should learn never to do such a thing, yet I do it over and over again. Hey everyone, I'm Pat Johnston, and I'd like to thank those of you in both Michigan and across the nation who really liked my Left of Lansing Friday short from last week, in which I talked about the weird white Christian nationalist characteristic known as the Fundy baby voice. We heard Alabama Republican Senator Katie Britt use the Fundy baby voice during her comical and yet disturbing State of the Union response last week. I juxtaposed Britt's Fundy baby-voiced response to that of Michigan Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer's State of the Union response from 2020, and just from that example, we saw how the white Christian nationalist movement dominates the Republican Party and the right-wing thought process. Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville, yes, a brilliant man, Katie Britt's Alabama Senate's colleague, said she was picked as a housewife, not just as a senator, somebody who sees it from a different perspective. Now, first of all, Alabama, no wonder you guys are struggling with those two stalwarts as your senators. Second, notice how Tuberville said that Britt was picked as a housewife, not just a senator. Hence, that's why they stuck her in the kitchen, because that's how the white Christian nationalist mind works. You see, they could have used some of her speech to talk about her political success. I mean, even if it's Alabama success, it's still an achievement to become the youngest serving woman in the U.S. Senate. And they could have focused on her work on the bipartisan, albeit deeply flawed, immigration bill. But instead, she was told to get back in the kitchen and speak like some mix between a Stepford Wives and Piper Laurie from the horror movie Carrie. And they told her to speak with that weird voice. I then played a portion of Governor Whitmer's speech, and there she was speaking from a podium during that 2020 speech, speaking at a school, appearing like a person of power and prestige, speaking like a governor, somebody who leads a state, somebody who is serious, and most of all, sounding normal. And in that speech, Governor Whitmer talked about her kids and her family. She didn't need to be stuck inside a kitchen to let everyone know that she's a mother. I mean, see, that's the difference between the white Christian nationalist world and the normal world. They have some kind of vision of a woman being subservient to men at all times, even if a woman has achieved some professional success. You remember how Vice President Mike Pence said that he would not meet one-on-one with a woman because, you know, he couldn't control his urges, I guess. That diminished the professionalism and the respect that a woman deserves if they get into a position of power. You see, Mike Pence, he just couldn't be stuck with them. It's that white Christian nationalist world. It's weird. It's warped. And to put an exclamation point on all this, what happened to all of Senator Britt's work on getting that immigration bill passed? It was flushed down the drain the moment Dear Leader Daddy Trump told Republicans to block their own immigration bill because it would help Joe Biden. Katie Britt was one of those who ended up opposing her own bill because Daddy has dominion over her and the entire Republican Party. So I'm happy that resonated with you last week, and I'm happy that last week's episode on the history of white Christian nationalism and white purity culture, featuring Dr. Sarah Mosler from Central Michigan University, also caught many of your ears last week. So please go back and give our discussion a listen if you haven't just yet. So if you don't mind, I'd just like to briefly bring something up that has been on my mind for a bit, and Katie Britt's vaudevillian performance was the real kickstarter for me. As many others have noted, Britt was caught lying while in her little fundy baby voice when she described how she talked with a woman who was sex trafficked at the age of 12 and was raped multiple times, and Britt insinuated that this woman was the illustration of President Biden's failure to secure the southern border. But thanks to independent journalist Jonathan Katz, who did the research on Britt's example, the way Britt framed the story was not only disingenuous, but it was only to stoke fear. As Katz highlighted, such a woman does exist. Her name is Carla Jacinto Romero. She shared her horrific story to a Senate subcommittee back in 2015, describing how she was held captive in Mexico by a sex trafficker when she was 12 to 16 years old before escaping. I mean, it's an awful, awful story. And Ms. Romero did indeed meet with Senator Britt last year, but the way that Senator Britt used Ms. Romero's story in her speech made it sound like it happened while Biden was in office, when it really occurred during the George W. Bush regime. The reporter, Jonathan Katz, said on his video about Britt's lie, which has gone viral, he said that it seems very clear to me that she is trying to create an association in people's minds between Joe Biden, the border, Mexicans, you know, Latins, people of Latin descent, and sexual violence. That's what she's going for, and she is doing it on the basis of something that you can only say is an out-and-out lie. It must have been obvious to her, at the very least, that she was not talking to someone who had recently been 12 years old. So Senator Britt was caught lying. But worse, she was caught lying to create an image that all immigrants, especially of Latin descent, are scary and are all violent. And in pure white culture, nationalist Trumpian style, Katie Britt is trying to fundraise off this, of course, claiming that the left is attacking her character and, worst of all, her faith. But you know what? What's even worse than that is that they're attacking anyone of faith. See, the GOP is Trumpian in that they refuse to ever admit that they made a mistake. And when they do, they claim that the attacks on them are really about their voters or their cult followers. But despite her efforts, Katie Britt did expose what the right wing is all about and has always been about: fear. They have no policy solutions. I mean, they had some, but scrapped those solutions so that Dear Leader Daddy could rant incoherently about the southern border. They use fear because they have no ideas of their own, other than figuring out ways to enrich their own side. You see, they use fear to hide all the ways that they're harming Americans each and every day. So, for example, Dear Leader Daddy met with Lake and Riley's parents the other day. Riley was the Georgia nursing student who was killed allegedly by a Venezuelan man who entered the country illegally. Now, Dear Leader Daddy took a picture of himself with her parents, while he also held a photo of Riley with his autograph on it. Because that's normal? Lake and Riley has become the conservative symbol for Biden's supposed failures at the border. And trust me, you'll hear her name throughout the rest of this campaign. And look, I'm not minimizing her death, which is tragic. And it should spur us to pass some immigration reforms, which we could have. But Dear Leader Daddy and the Republicans don't want solutions. They need to play the fear card for this election year. Kind of like how we're always supposed to fear caravans of migrants each and every election year. I mean, the sad and upsetting part is that there is a problem at the border, and we need greater security and more judges down there to adjudicate cases at a faster pace. I mean, we could just do that for starters, just for starters. But instead, we get this nonstop performative pratter instead of solutions. It's because Republicans need fear. They thrive on fear. Their voters thrive on fear. If you watch Fox News, listen to talk radio, listen to right-wing podcasts, it's all about fear, 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 fear. It works. Fear works inside the weird, warped right-wing world. I worked in conservative talk radio for many years. I know how fear works. Look, I've told this story before, but I'll quickly tell it again. I remember when there was a fight over whether or not to allow children of migrants into the city of Alma, which is part of my Gratiot County here in Michigan, a few years ago. There was this huge uproar over that. And I remember people calling the conservative station of my last radio job in Saginaw, and they just wanted to share their anger, their pure anger over allowing these kids to be cared for by a Christian services group. Now, look, cognitive dissonance runs rampant within the weird right-wing world, which I will talk about in this week's Last Call in a few minutes. Anyway, I got on the microphone to ask the longtime host, after the host took all kinds of calls, why people were so heated up about this. Why were they losing sleep over it, especially since the kids would have been housed and cared for by a Christian service? Which made the host laugh because even he saw the ridiculousness of it all. He saw the irony. But I asked the host why this riled up so many of their listeners. And the host said, because people are afraid, Pat. Of children? I responded. And the host said, well, I'm not saying it's right, but that's what it is. I knew that to be the case. I did. I knew that to be the case, but I needed the host to admit it for everyone else to hear. It's always about fear. This week in the UP town of Iron Mountain, some residents lost their minds up there because they heard Governor Whitmer is allowing 500 migrants to stay in hotels up there. And the mayor had to go up in front of the Dickinson County Board of Commission and tell everyone there that such stories were false. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter. People up there believe, or some people believed up there, that it's happening. But let's just say, some immigrants did move into a hotel up in Iron Mountain for a bit. Why be afraid of it? Oh, and as good friend of the podcast and Ottawa County progressive Joe Spaulding said in response to the Iron Mountain freakout he posted on X, but are there litter boxes in the high school bathrooms? Good one there, Joe, which was another made-up right-wing hoax designed to scare people throughout the country and make them hate LGBTQ+ students. It's all about fear, like we saw in Oakland County when Sheriff Mike Bouchard is fundraising off fear. Freelance reporter Kaylee Licklider did a great job at illustrating how, like Senator Britt's usage of a crime from years ago to stoke fear today, Oakland County Sheriff Mike Bouchard did the exact same. She posted on X that the Katie Britt scandal is kind of like the Oakland County Sheriff sounding the alarm about a quote-unquote uptick in high-end burglaries and then held a press conference just to say the suspects were in police custody in Indiana for crimes they committed over a year before the quote-unquote uptick. Smells like a trend to me, says Kaylee. Then she continued, 24 hours after Sheriff Bouchard posted a video on social media alerting residents about an increase in burglaries in high-end neighborhoods, he held a campaign event at Lily's on the Green with high-end homeowners and raised $300,000+, which is the most money he's raised from a single campaign event. Bouchard would win probably on name recognition alone, but he needs to be MAGA. He needs the right-wing fear playbook to fundraise and to win votes. But the thing is, Republicans keep telling us what to be afraid of. They are always telling us what to be afraid of all of the time. Immigrants, Antifa, ISIS, people who don't say Merry Christmas, Bud Light, people who want to retire at the age of 65, independent-minded women, people who kneel, except when praying, of course, To Kill a Mockingbird. I mean, they're always telling us what to fear. They tell us to look at the squirrel while begging us to ignore everything that they are doing to us that affects us on a daily basis. You see, we could have a polluter pay bill here in Michigan, forcing industry to have some skin in the game when they pollute and plunder our land before deserting it after they're done with us. But Republicans gutted that bill 30 years ago, telling industry to pollute at will. And then, after poisoning the land and poisoning the people near that land, we'll have those same fine people clean up the mess that you left for them. A fine deal indeed. Well, Democrats in Lansing are trying to pass a new polluter pay bill. Tell them to get it done this year. Tell your representative to get it done. The right wing tells us to be afraid of drag queens and LGBTQ+ Americans. But it seems as though they're not the ones to worry about, because day after day, I'm reading and seeing stories about Republicans getting busted for sexual assault or rape or murder? Yes, an Alabama man has been arrested for the murder and the torture of another man. And guess what? The man who was arrested worked for the Alabama Republican Party and was part of the Young Republican Party effort there. Murder? Torture? Where's Dear Leader Daddy caring about that crime committed by a Republican? I mean, in Michigan, the former Republican Speaker of the House, Lee Chatfield, is accused of sexually assaulting his sister-in-law, who accused him of assaulting her when she was still underage. I mean, we have example after example after example of Republicans committing crimes. There are Republican criminals everywhere, which is why we should demand protection from them throughout the country. Do we need laws? We might. We might need laws to protect ourselves against Republicans. You see, they want us to pay attention to other supposed scary things just so that we will ignore all the criming that they're doing on a daily basis. And don't even get me started on gun violence and gun violence against women. Republicans want domestic abusers. They support domestic abusers. They protect domestic abusers to carry guns. You tell me who's out there trying to protect people and who's not. Fear has always been their playbook. It's to divert us from paying attention to all the damage that they have done. And that's partially what this podcast is about. It's about exposing them for everything that they have done to us and why we have to stop them from winning elections. You're listening to LOL. And Rich, thank you so much for leftoflansing.com. You did a great job on setting all that up. Please subscribe to leftoflansing.com.
Left of Lansing podcast. If you truly want to get Pat fired up, talk about Tigers baseball or how you think the 90s produced the worst music of any decade. You've been warned. Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com and follow him on Twitter at leftoflansing. Here's Pat.
No guest on this week's episode. Tried to get a fellow podcaster on, but we just couldn't work out a time, so hopefully we'll find another week to talk. However, on next week's show, Michigan Democratic State Representative Runjeev Puri, who is the majority whip for the State House and represents District 24, which is around Canton Township, will be my guest here on Left of Lansing. I'd like to ask him, what are some of his big priorities of 2024, as Democrats are expected to regain their two-seat majority in the House after a pair of special elections next month. And I'd also like to ask him about some of the major wins that Michigan Democrats experienced last year, including clean energy, gun safety, reinvestments in public education, and expanded voting rights. And since Representative Puri is the chair of the Appropriations Subcommittee on Transportation, I'd like to ask him to share some of his ideas on where he thinks the future of transportation and transit will be for the state of Michigan. Look, I believe the State House Democrats recently held a meeting revolving around transit, which could help attract younger talent here to the state. Now, Representative Puri worked in the automotive industry and probably backs the future of EV cars, as do I, but we need something more than just draining more and more and more money into fixing and widening our roads. We need to start thinking about the future, and transit is a major need in the state. I'll also ask him to comment on what he thinks Democrats must do to ensure that Michigan not only stays blue for Biden this fall, but how Democrats retain the U.S. Senate seat and how they retain the state house this fall. That is just as important. So lots to talk about with Democratic State Representative Runjeev Puri next week. Okay, so this story broke while I was preparing for this episode, and I can't let it go. I'm sorry, but it's something I've brought up on another Friday short. But I have to bring it up again here because it is something that's not only a free speech issue, but it's one that could end up hurting Democrats tremendously. The U.S. House, run by a slim Republican majority, overwhelmingly passed a bill that would essentially end TikTok. Ashley Murray from the state's newsroom reports the following, and I quote, The U.S. House on Wednesday overwhelmingly passed a bill that effectively bans TikTok unless the company splits from its Chinese owner ByteDance because of national security concerns. The 352-65 vote occurred just a week after lawmakers introduced the bipartisan proposal and days after the powerful House Committee on Energy and Commerce unanimously advanced the legislation, an unusual speed for the 118th Congress. The bill, dubbed the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act, okay, now heads to the Senate, where concerns over singling a private company in legislation may slow momentum. President Joe Biden, whose administration had a hand in crafting the bill, is expected to sign the measure if the upper chamber approves it. Now, despite broad support across the aisle, the legislation has been met by fierce opposition from TikTok users, totaling some 170 million in the United States, and from a coalition of young House lawmakers. Okay, so that was Ashley Murray's story there. Now, Left of Lansing does not have a TikTok account, although I've been thinking about it, not because I'm worried about it being a Chinese-owned company, really, that doesn't bother me, but that I'm already having a tough time keeping up with my other social media accounts. That's really the primary reason why I have not gotten TikTok just yet. If someday this little venture ends up making a little bit of a profit, maybe I will have to hire a social media manager and then I'll have a TikTok account, but not yet. However, the part which really, really irks me about this story came from our good friends from Distill Social, who tweeted that every Michigan Democrat in the U.S. House voted for the ban. Shulton, Slotkin, Stevens, Kildee voted for the ban? Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib did not vote for the ban, but she chose not to vote at all. What are we doing here, everyone? What are we doing? As the popular angry staffer posted on X, Democrats should not fall for this farce that GOP is operating in good faith here. While they're pretending to care about national security, they're the main ones benefiting from TikTok's information. GOP goals in banning TikTok, number one, hurt Biden's candidacy, and number two, xenophobia. That's exactly what this is about. And I cannot believe Democrats are falling for this trap. Everyone understands our personal information isn't so personal online. Who thinks, oh, you know, whatever I'm doing online, nobody else can see. Really? As progressive radio host and pundit John Fugelsang said on social media, I'm outraged that Chinese tech oligarchs are using TikTok to collect our personal data like the American and Saudi tech oligarchs already do. But that's the point. I'm fine with trying to protect the personal info of everyone and wanting to keep companies accountable. But if that were the case, the House would have gone after Google, Facebook, Twitter, and more. But no, they go after TikTok because anti-China and anti-Asian rhetoric is exactly what right-wing opponents of that Goshen electric vehicle battery plant in Mecosta County were doing. They relied on that. They used it to stoke, wait for it, fear. Fear amongst the people living there. So this isn't new. And the most baffling part about all of this is how TikTok has served as a resourceful tool in connecting with younger voters. In 2022, Michigan Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer's campaign had a highly engaged social media team. In fact, she still does have a highly engaged social media team. And it's a team that's also engaging with young voters on TikTok. And this type of engagement and messaging helped Democrats big time in that election as they took over the entire state legislature. Later reports said, and I'm quoting here, just listen, young people in Michigan turned out to vote last November at higher rates than anywhere else in the country, according to the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, that's called CIRCLE, at Tufts University. Voters ages 18 to 29 turned out at a rate of 37% in Michigan, higher than any other state CIRCLE analyzed and far higher than the national average youth turnout rate of 23%. Additionally, Michigan was one of only four states where youth turnout was higher in 2022 than in 2018, according to the state of Michigan. So, of course, TikTok alone didn't give us those high voting numbers amongst young voters, but it helped. Look, throughout my entire life, Democrats have sucked at messaging. Just sucked. But I felt like Democrats in Michigan got it. and their messaging machine worked. Not only that, but progressive messaging seems to have really gotten it as well. Republicans hate that. They understand how popular TikTok is with younger people, and they don't like how young people can share progressive messages back and forth, including things like voting information. But if there's another reason to be against this awful, awful bill, which will fail in the courts on free speech issues alone, maybe this will illustrate my point.
The greatest indication I've seen that TikTok is toxic is the fact that thousands of teenagers called their legislators this week saying that they would kill themselves. Yes, literally commit suicide if Congress made ByteDance sell TikTok. No, not ban TikTok, but force the CCP propaganda arm to relinquish TikTok to a company that is, I don't know, not toxic, not interested in exploiting your data for their own personal gain, putting United States national security at risk, and furthering the twisting of the minds of America's youth.
That's Michigan Republican Congressman John James. Do you really believe him when he says that many quote-unquote teenagers called their legislators and said that they would kill themselves if there were no TikTok? And speaking of the furthering of the twisting of minds that Congressman John James just said there, is he really serious? He comes from the Christian Nationalist Republican Party. He comes from MAGA. Twisting of minds? No, I'm more worried about you right now, John James. I'm more worried about what you guys have in store for this country's democracy, this country's future. You gave away the game there, John. You gave it away. You don't want young people communicating with each other. You don't want them sharing messages back and forth, highlighting just how much Republicans are trying to take away LGBTQ plus rights, abortion rights, the rights for workers, and how you would like to turn America's education system into a for-profit organization for you and your buddies, and especially your benefactor, Betsy DeVos. That's why you want to get rid of TikTok. Oh, and while I'm thinking about it, another reason why Republicans and the right wing want to get rid of TikTok and get rid of certain social media platforms, they want to get rid of citizen journalism. They want everyone to have to rely on the corporate media and its incessant both sidesing of everything. I mean, I just shared with you a few minutes ago about Alabama Senator Katie Britt lying during her State of the Union address. Well, guess who did the research to disclose how she lied? It wasn't anyone from the corporate media. It was a freelance journalist who shared his findings on social media. That's why the rich and the powerful and the elite want to get rid of TikTok. They want to get rid of social media. Yes, social media has its faults. Yes, it is filled with just things that are awful. But there is good that comes from it. I'm sorry. I've written this before. I've talked about this before. The corporate media are not going to come to save us. The courts are not coming to save us. It is up to us to save us. So once again, if John James is for something, I'm usually against it, like I am here. Look, I'm glad there's nothing more pressing going on in the world like immigration or paid family leave or reinstating the child tax credit or lowering housing costs or maybe banning assault weapons, which are harming kids far more than a social media platform. I'm glad tackling TikTok was on the forefront of these congresspeople's agendas, many of whom still think BlackBerries are in style. And I don't care that Dear Leader Daddy Trump is suddenly against the ban before he was all for banning it. Yes, he's for it now because a billionaire buddy of his is part of TikTok. Although, this does then prove that he's in bed with China then, right, MAGA? Again, the donor base of the Republican Party hates TikTok, hates it, because it empowers younger people and allows them to share information, bypassing the corporate media elites and Elon Musk. Oh, and speaking of Musk, I haven't heard of a bill yet forcing Musk to divest from Twitter. He's just allowed to highlight and amplify the white male incel movement that's running rampant on that site. So, Democrats in the House, and especially the Michigan Democratic delegation in the House, congratulations I'm being played once again by the xenophobic Christian Nationalist Republican Party. When will you DC Democrats ever learn? Oh, man.
Listening to Left of Lansing. If the podcast isn't enough and you are in need of more Pat, follow him on Twitter and like him on Facebook. Also, don't forget you can read more of his thoughts and hear an archive of past episodes on leftoflansing.com.
Before I get to the last call for this week, the Left of Lansing online poll last week asked if the possibility of white Christian nationalism gaining more power with the Trump victory this November scared you more than ever before. 77% of you said yes. The rest of you are fine living in Gilead, I guess. So this week's Left of Lansing online poll, which you will find on Twitter or X at Left of Lansing, is this. Does social media help or hurt the political process? Does social media help or hurt the political process? Your answers are help, hurt, or both. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call, and let's talk about the right-wing cognitive dissonance machine. It's a reliable machine for the weird right-wing media world, especially for the weird right-wing media world. So apparently, the folks at Fox News this week had a bit of a hissy fit over a supposed proposal that would ban sodas, or pop as we say here in Michigan, from Denver, Colorado public schools. Now, let me play you the first minute or so of this clip featuring Fox News commentator Kennedy from the MTV fame back in the 1990s mocking this proposal.
Well, another proposed ban that could be equally unpopular, sodas in schools across Denver. Advocates say it's one way to get a handle on skyrocketing childhood obesity rates. Kennedy is the host of Kennedy Saves the World podcast, and she never has an opinion on anything.
No, I say we tie the children up. We put them back in their rooms. We Zoom in a room and control everything they put in their bodies, everything they see and interface with. These bans tend not to work. They usually end up in kids ingesting more calories and more sodas because they become so hyper obsessed with it. And there's one city council member who's saying, this is just a nudge. This is just a nudge for parents.
Yes, this is Councilman Chris Hines. He says, we're not taking the freedom of choice from families. Should a parent want their child to have soda, orange juice, or any other sugary beverage, that is their right. We're only nudging the default choice to be a healthy one.
Oh, what a wonderful nudge. No, but that's the problem, is cities like this, they have the idea that government has to parent for them. The parents are not to be trusted. It's incredibly offensive.
Oh, so much to get to here, and so little time. First, Kennedy and her Fox News crew got things mixed up. Not shocking. Denver schools did not propose this soda ban for public schools. It's a proposal to remove sugary drinks from kids' meals at restaurants in the Denver area. Parents could still buy pop for their kids at restaurants, but at an extra cost. Now, I don't know exactly the science or the data behind such a plan. It seems like we need to do more as a society when it comes to America's overall obesity problem, like scaling back on sugary drinks or processed foods, or even doing a little more exercise. And it does seem obvious that limiting a child's sugary drink intake is kind of a no-brainer, but that's a discussion for another time. And I would say that part of the fun of going to a restaurant is, let's face it, not to eat as healthy and to kind of splurge, isn't it? I mean, I remember I love going to restaurants on a Friday night with my parents and buying those thick chocolate shakes that you get in those huge silver cups that kept everything cold. Ooh, that was the bomb. I can't do that anymore. Anyway, the goal of this Denver proposal is just to help give kids healthier options. Okay, but you heard Kennedy there mock the proposal, saying that parents should have the right to do whatever they want to do, and the government shouldn't be telling people how to live their lives. And she sarcastically said that we should constantly put kids on Zoom so we see what they're doing at all times. It's the nanny state, according to Kennedy and the right wing. But she and her zany host over there at Fox News, like everyone else in the right wing media world, always fall victim to cognitive dissonance. In this segment, they're complaining about government overreach and about government getting into the lives of parents and their children. But then in the next segment, they're complaining about the books that kids are reading and how we should burn them to ashes to protect our kids. And then they'll later argue why the government must block a woman's right to choose. I mean, I just talked about how Republicans like Michigan Congressman John James are so happy to pass a bill ending TikTok because they believe TikTok is hurting America's youth. So much for freedom. That's the nanny state right there, everyone. And that's the way of the right-wing world, inconsistency and hypocrisy. If anything, ban Fox News from public schools unless you're teaching them all about cognitive dissonance.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this episode of The Left of Lansing. Tune in next week to hear my discussion with State Democratic Representative and Majority Party Whip Ranjiv Puri. Thanks again for the great numbers I received from last week's episodes, especially from the Friday short. And remember, I always release my Left of Lansing Friday shorts by the afternoon, just, you know, giving you a little something extra that I didn't add in the weekly episode and also to help you get through the weekend. Don't forget to subscribe to Left of Lansing wherever you get your podcast, and please let me know which stories I should be covering by emailing me leftoflansing@gmail.com. Please have a safe and great St. Patrick's Day weekend. Until next week, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.